Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Today on Life Quest, I'm talking with Maria Furlow. She's a wife, a mother of five, the head of women's ministry at Lake Forest Church in Huntersville, North Carolina. She's also an author. And today on Life Quest, I'm talking with her about her book, Breaking the Fear Cycle, How to Find Peace for Your Anxious Heart. Maria, welcome to Life Quest.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Dwight. It's a pleasure to be here.
Why did you write this book at this time?
That's a great question. You know, after I had gone through the season of carrying my sweet boy Gideon, and I had worked through a lot of fear that I had on my own, my church actually came up to me and asked if I would teach some women's Bible studies based on what I had learned, and I said absolutely. And after running those classes, women came up to me and said, you know, Maria, we've been going back to these notes from this class, and we really believe that you should try to seek publication. And so that was about 2 years ago, and that's about how long it takes.
Very good.
to get the book in your hands. So it was really, you know, just a call and a burden that I had to share what God had taught me.
I was thinking about this. Your chapter one is your greatest fear. And
yes.
I was thinking about how if we don't have fears about real things, we'll make up some. It seems as if we come up with them. You know, the boss doesn't really say hi very enthusiastically to us, and we assume we're going to get fired. And so when I've counseled people, they come and say, well, I'm afraid of this. I said, what would the worst thing to happen if your fear was true?
Yeah.
And that gets us into a discussion.
Yeah.
What is your greatest fear? How do we find out those things? How do we label them?
Yeah, I think that that's a great practice to do. I still do that every time a fear pops in my head. And really the very first thing that I encourage people to do in chapter one is sit down for a little bit amount of time and write fears until you can't think of any more. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, empty the conscious onto the paper and see what comes out. And in my experience, this practice has just been really eye-opening for people that when they just let the fears flow freely, they're surprised at how many we can come up with. Because you do get down to the nitty-gritty of, like you said, even the ones that we create in our minds that aren't really there. And so it's really eye-opening to see all of the fears that we are harboring in our hearts, and then getting them out into the paper and out into the open will let you, you know, let God minister to them and help him free you of them in a way that you wouldn't be able to do if you didn't give them over to you first.
Through the years, I found that some Christians have a fear that they don't have salvation. I've found others that are fearful about end-time events, and they create all kinds of possibilities there, even young people. These fears that come to us, I like what you did early in the book. You know, you say you create these, and I'm afraid of a tsunami, even though I don't live near the coast, or cancer, or brain-eating bacteria, choking. I have four daughters, and women seem to be very susceptible to, is this a tumor, or something like that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yes, and, you know, those are things that reveal something about our faith. And I think that, you know, even you bringing up end times is a great example.
Right.
I just think that in identifying the fears, one of the next steps is identifying where your kink and where your fault, like where our faith is weak. And for me, it really was heaven. You know, I would skim past those Revelation verses, or I really didn't want to dig in because it, if I was being honest with myself, I really had a hard time believing it was true.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was finally faced with death, where I couldn't avoid it anymore, I had to really dig into God's word and really challenge myself and my faith to really start believing what the Bible talks about in that area. And like my husband, he's a different example. He really struggles with anxiety, and it's because his area of faith that he needs to bring to God is that God's control is really better than my husband's control, but my husband doesn't believe it all the time. His control seems better.
Yeah.
And so really identifying those places where we doubt.
I like that. You go into the story of Job in this. Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about why you think that's a good biblical illustration.
Well, I think for fellow fearers can understand that Job is like, you know, all of our worst nightmares come true.
Yeah, true story.
You know, and the fact that Job's story exists in the Bible really brings us more fear, because it shows that God was a righteous, or Job was a righteous man, and God still allowed all this happening
yeah.
to him. And so it debunks any of our temptation to think that, oh, if I'm good enough, then bad things won't happen to us. It's a glaring example of how that is not true. And so the story of Job brings more fear, and it is tempting to use his story to almost make it worse. Mm-hmm. And so I just think that, you know, we get stuck sometimes in the first couple of chapters of Job because it's his story, and then we kind of get tired through those 30 chapters of ranting.
Yeah.
But I just think it's really important to work through the whole story and to see how God comes out in the end and what God says. Which for me, you know, on the wrestling mat of fear with God, you know, I often end on those Job verses that say, "Forgive me, God, because I asked on things that were not mine to dwell on."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's God's sovereign control over all of that that we have to remember that He laid the foundations of the earth. Surely He can take care of my fears.
I've noticed that often. I start always with myself, but in relating to people, we tend to really get wound up full of anxiety and fear, often over with things that we have absolutely no control over.
Yeah.
You know, what's going to happen with the world of politics? What's going to happen in, you know, if they pass some weird religious law in Eastern Europe? And you say, what does that got to do with me? But
yeah.
I can worry about it. I look forward to weekends when I usually turn off the TV and radio, and because I enjoy politics, but I don't want to hear it. You know,
yeah.
I need this rest because it develops an anxiety.
Yes. And I think, you know, for me, I'm the same way, and I had to really be honest about with myself as to what type of media I can and can't handle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it, for me, you know, I think it's okay to take a fast from it and to take a break. And for me, I was realizing that news was just making fear worse
yeah.
for me. And so, you know, in our house, my husband is a news guy, and he communicates to me what I need to know
yeah.
so that I'm not completely out of touch. But social media is hard for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's okay to take breaks sometimes from that if it does perpetuate our fear, because it's almost like I look at it as all of this information that we have is kind of like taking a bite of the tree from the knowledge of good and evil again.
Yeah.
We have way more information than I think we were ever created to have. And so it perpetuates our, you know, it just reminds us of how limited that we are. And so then we fear, because we're smart enough to know that we are out of control.
Yeah.
The world is too big and too painful, you know, for us. But God's given us our days, our 24 hours, and our own little life to be most concerned about. And you're right, we don't need to take on the world. That's His job.
It seems, at least in my life, to be tied in with the whole what ifs. I just go on and on with what if this happens, or what if that doesn't happen, or, you know, what if one of my four daughters sticks with this no good boyfriend, or whatever the issue
yes.
may be.
Yes. Yes. And I think you actually brought it up in the beginning of the discussion. Sometimes I think we have to let those scenarios play out in our mind to get to the end of it and to ask ourselves, do we believe that God could even meet us in this place?
Mm-hmm.
You know, my son, I would go through this with my kids. You know, I'm afraid of bears. I'm afraid of getting sick.
Sure.
And I'm like, okay, let's talk about that. What happens if you do get sick? Well, I hate going to the doctors. Okay, I understand that. Well,
yeah.
What happens if the doctors that you don't like? And then when we process through it to all the way to the end, and to be honest, some of these worst-case what-if scenarios end with someone dying.
Uh-huh.
And then we say, okay, well, what do we believe about that?
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, letting those what-ifs play all the way to the end, and then asking ourselves, can God meet us even there, rather than just doing, you know, over and over in our mind on the circumstance or the what if, letting it play out to the very end and really examining, you know, what that would mean for us. And, you know, and I experienced that firsthand with Carrie and Gideon,
yes.
You know, God's comfort, supernatural comfort that he is capable of.
Mm-hmm. You talk a little bit about prayer. You talk a lot about prayer, but I mean that this shift that we should have from pleading with God, please do this, or we define what he needs to do for us, and then to a different type of prayer. Can you
yeah.
unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, that was a turning point for me when I realized that most of the time all I did was beg God to not let my fears come true. And I don't necessarily think that we should ever stop doing that. I think that's us running to our Father. But when you do it all the time, I think, you know, it only makes the fear worse, number one. And then we're missing a greater picture that he has for our lives. So I try to picture it in my mind as like, you know, when we're begging and pleading, we're focusing on the exact fear that we're in. But bringing ourselves up a little bit higher to God's bird's eye view of our life, our community, his kingdom, and seeing what work we can focus on that he has for us to do, whether it's in our families or our church or loving people that we're around, and taking that inward fear and instead taking that energy outward to gift other people with love and with God's comfort, and really doing some kingdom level work praying instead of just focusing all the time in on our own fear, and just having conversations with God about, you know, what do you got going on, God? What's going on in the workplace that I can work on? Or, you know, really seeking him about what the greater picture is going on rather than all the time our own circumstances.
There seems to be a need for a balance. One side says, well, God's in control, and that's just what happens. I really cringe whenever there's some kind of a national disaster and somebody is interviewed and they said, well, you know, God's in control, and kind of blames God for everything. And then
right.
the other end is where we say, well, I guess it's bad enough that now we need to go to the Lord with our concerns
right.
instead of first.
Right. Yeah. Those disasters and those tragedy, they perpetuate our fear. But, you know, really it helps me sometimes to go back through biblical history and to see all through the Bible from Genesis to Revelation, the Bible is littered with things like this happening,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And just I think it helps us to look through history to see how God has worked and is present even in those things, and to remember that he's doing a greater work in circumstances than even we will ever be able to
right.
see, and just leaving it at that and trusting it, because honestly those big questions are I don't think we'll ever fully figure them out until we get to sit before the Lord and see his whole beautiful picture
sure.
Unveiled before us.
You have an interesting section here in the middle of your book which says there are some Bible verses we tend to skip over.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, the verses that talk about suffering and pain, and that God produces perseverance through the pain, and that, you know, sometimes there's fruit that he wants to bear in our life that can only be experienced through pain, and I just really like to skip over those and to just read them but not let them sink in, or really want to be in denial about them because I wasn't comfortable with them. And so really just asking ourselves, do we believe the Bible to be true, 100% truth? Do we trust God? And if we believe the Bible to be true and we do trust God, then we have to stop fearing pain so much and running away from pain. And when I was pregnant with Gideon, I pictured myself in a burning fire. That's what it felt like. I felt like I was in an unquenchable fire, and I kept on trying to run out of it and to get out of the pain. And I remember, you know, just one time in my prayer times, and God speaking to me and saying, Maria, this pain is not for you to get out of, but I will dwell with you in it. And that was the first time I was like, ouch.
Yeah.
I don't want to sit through this pain. I want to run away from it. But I see now that that's what God's word is talking about when it's talking about seasons of suffering and pain, that we're not supposed to all the time run away from them. Sometimes we need to sit in them and allow the pain to sink deep in us, and allow that pain for God to use that pain to do a mighty work in us that sometimes he can only do through that pain. And those are the verses that, you know, I just like to avoid when fear was running rampant in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And skip over those.
you know, the understanding that God is with us in our pain and shares our pain. I spent some time as a chaplain at a hospital, and, you know, sometimes I didn't try to produce words and formulas that was going to help. I just sat with them.
Yeah.
And that seemed to be helpful. And knowing that God is by our side is a big difference if we have that faith.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Let's see here. I've ruined your book by marking it up and folding down the papers and all that sort of thing.
That's great.
Something triggered something in me, and it was this. As I deal with people, and they look, maybe it's because of illness or just their own anxieties, most people aren't afraid of death if they're Christians, but they're afraid of dying, the process of.
Yeah.
And that's a fear that seems to be very real as we're living longer and maybe becoming more susceptible to some long-term illnesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that can stem back to, I mean, I still think about that. And those are examples to me of the types of thoughts that I just need to take captive and to stop them in its track. Because the truth is, we don't know how we're going to die. We don't know the level of pain that it's going to entail. And we are not in that moment right now. And so when those future fears come, and that's what it is, it's a future fear, right? Like, what will happen if? What will happen when? What will it be like? And God is in the territory of future, but we are not in that place. Our job is today. And so when those thoughts come that I cannot reconcile and just bring me so much anxiety, that's, you know, where that Bible verse comes in about taking this thought captive to God, mm-hmm. and to really asking myself the question, is this fear that I'm having about dying or about death, Is it something that I'm actually experiencing today? And if the answer is no, then I try to do something, anything else, to focus on what I do know to be true about today and to shift my thinking into those things instead of what could be in tomorrow. Because at the end of the day, we know that if tomorrow is my day to go, and even if it is painful, that we know that God's going to be there, and we're just going to rest in that and move on in what today has.
You do direct us to also look at how Jesus prayed.
Mm-hmm.
In his life on this earth. And how do you see that as helpful?
Yeah, that chapter, it's John chapter 17, and it's, you know, John records prayers of Jesus's before he was about to die, and they're just so precious to me because Jesus was about to suffer inexpressible pain, mm-hmm. physical pain and spiritual pain, all of the pain. And it's really telling to me what he prays about. And I think one of the most standout prayers to me that he prays is for his disciples. And I kind of relate that to the people who are closest to us, our inner circle.
Mm-hmm.
And he prays for protection over them from the evil one.
Yes.
He doesn't pray for them for ease of living. Mm-hmm. He doesn't pray for them for good health. He prays that they would be united and that they would have protection from the evil one. And so, I take real example from that in how Jesus prayed in those John 17 passages. And when I am struggling with fear or when I'm at a loss of what to pray through next, I'll just grab that chapter and I'll use Jesus's examples for prayers, and I'll translate them into my own life. So I like to use, because, you know, we actually don't have that many examples of knowing what exactly Jesus prayed. We know that he went away a lot to pray.
Yes.
But so I really, you know, I went through the Gospels and I studied to see what exactly Jesus did pray that we can know. And I just copy and paste those prayers into my own,
very good,
my own prayer time.
Tell our listening audience about the end of each chapter. You have this questions for reflection.
Yeah, those are meant, my prayer for those is that they're meant to be used in whichever way is most helpful to the reader. And so there's three different ways I look at it is that you can do. You can, you know, kind of pray through them and just have like a prayer discussion with God, mm-hmm. through those questions. I'm a big fan of writing things down. It just helps me get it out for real.
Right.
You know, journaling the answers, or probably best of all is going through those questions as a group. You know, spending the week between just reading the chapter, and then when you get together with a group of people, mm-hmm. you know, going through those questions together and supporting one another in your answers. That was my heart and my prayer behind those questions at the end of each chapter.
I'm talking with Maria Furlow. She's written a book called Breaking the Fear Cycle: How to Find Peace for Your Anxious Heart. Maria, where can our listeners get a copy of your book?
Yeah, anywhere where books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Christian book distributors. A great place to just become familiar with the book is on the website breakingthefearcycle.com.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that gives a synopsis, and even I think you can read a free chapter there. So.
Yeah. Maria, thanks so much for being with us on Life Quest.
Thanks so much for having me. It was such a privilege and a joy and an honor for sure.
My name is Dwight Lanehoff. This program comes to you from studios in the Meadowglade Church, Battleground, Washington.